We're back to the Neil Haley Show and also the Media Giant Effect. And we've been really highlighting, spotlighting entrepreneurs, CEOs. I'm excited to welcome to the program Peter Goodmanson. Peter, thanks for stopping by, man. And you know what? It's there is something in our blood, right? Entrepreneurship, CEO type stuff that we really just feel like creating and touching things and seeing how they work in ways and figuring it out in certain ways where people wouldn't want to put those, drag those hours out and really do it, right?
Exactly. In a phrase, intellectual curiosity. That's what really drives interest in life, frankly. I hope till the day I die, I'm trying to learn something new.
Learning. And I learned that as a teacher for so many years, and then went into the entrepreneur journey. But how did your entrepreneur journey start?
Yeah, I mean, curiously, I actually grew up in suburban New York. My parents had met at the United Nations. My father from Iceland, my mother from Canada. So I grew up thinking I might be a diplomat when I got older, as kids often just default to what their parents do. But I studied history in college, and then I was a Marine artillery officer for a few years, and I went to business school at Harvard. And then from there, I dabbled in Wall Street for a little bit, didn't really like it. I learned that I really wanted to run things. That's how I ended up in a business career. It's a way to run organizations and really help people and learn new things.
Let's back it up first. Harvard. Okay. Now we're talking about educated. We're talking about how hard did you work in school to get to Harvard? You know,
pretty hard. I was a good student. I went to Brown University undergrad, studied history there. But actually what paid off the most in business school was the military experience, because at the age of 25 or so, when I was in the MBA program, I had actually led Marines, whereas a lot of my colleagues who were very, very bright had worked at places like Goldman Sachs and McKinsey, and they had managed spreadsheets and PowerPoint, not people. And so much of business is about people, not just numbers.
That's so true. People, not just numbers. And do you think you learned that in Brown in certain ways?
I think the Marine Corps, really. I mean,
Marines. Well, okay.
Brown, not so much. I mean, Brown is more intellectual abstractions, the Marine Corps is this. There's no laboratory for leadership like the military in general, and specifically in my case, the Marine Corps.
See, I'm very impressed by this because you have the education background, but you saw from the military. It gave you the ability to lead. You had the intellectual ability, and intellectual is so important to learn all the time, to constantly learn new things to keep up with the competition. But ultimately, if you're not a people person, if you're not able to delegate, and you're not going to be successful. So you have the full package, it sounds like, Peter.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And also I would say that military service is also very good for learning humility and understanding that good ideas can come from anywhere. I mean, a Lance Corporal who's 19 years old might have an idea that the general hadn't thought of. And you have to keep your ears open for that. And the last thing you want, especially if you have name brand credentials otherwise, the old, I went to Harvard Business School, stand back, I have the answers, is absolutely a recipe for disaster. So always keep your ear open and be open to where good ideas can come from.
Oh, no doubt about it. Like, think about this. Education, I definitely was educated, but first I went undergrad, dropped out of school to become a professional wrestler, came back, got my undergrad, then went to grad school for a teacher and got my master's in education, and then basically saw the value of education. It was hard for me to see it. You had the right parents that probably, you know, pushed you towards that, or you had that intrinsic motivation to be successful, to go to school, to want to achieve high level results. Achiever must be one of your top talents. Achiever's mine, according to Gallup, and ideation's number one. Let's talk about, you know, specifically enough, your entrepreneur journey, businesses. How did that develop? Which businesses do you currently have, and what is your big focus?
Yeah, I follow a pattern, what I call buy, grow, sell, which is to buy or occasionally be hired to run a small business, grow it over the course of 4 or 5 years, and then usually sell it. I try not to get greedy. I another way to phrase it is I have a career of triples. A lot of people, some entrepreneurs are really wired to do the what I call two geeks in a garage, you know, the Hewlett-Packard mythology and all that, where it's, we're going to take a swing at it and maybe it'll end up being being Google, but it'll probably end up being nothing. I'm not like that. I much prefer, there's nothing's a sure bet, but I'd rather take something from, you know, 2 million in profit to 5 million in profit and sell it rather than try to squeeze it to beyond its capabilities, perhaps. It's a little bit of a cautious approach, but it's worked for me.
All right, so let's talk about specifically enough the current business you're
yeah, in. So I'm CEO of a company called Be Home 24/7. It's a property management company, property management software. We serve two markets, vacation rentals or short-term and vacation rentals, and then residential, which is mostly single family for rent. And the software controls smart devices like locks and thermostats and leak detectors and noise detectors and so on, and then integrates those with operating workflows like housekeeping, maintenance management, vendor management, that sort of thing. And then finally, all that is packaged in the context of resident or guest communications. So if you've ever stayed in a vacation rental where there's a three-ring binder that has the Wi-Fi code, right, and local restaurant discount coupons, all that's electronic now in our software. So it's a very good space. It's the space is globally called prop tech or property technology. It's one of the hotter areas in technology. And right now, the technology sector as a whole is a little bit in retreat. The big companies, the Googles and the Apples and so on, have overhired, and so they're taking the advantage of an economic downturn to sort of cleanse their rosters a little bit. Not so in prop tech. Prop tech is very hot, and because real estate is one of the last sectors of our society that has really not yet taken advantage of the digital revolution, and that's what we're partaking in.
Now, see, that's very, very smart. And do you guys have people that are Airbnb people?
Plug into Airbnb, VRBO, Booking.com, all of those. They're called CRMs, customer relationship management, marketing things. So they are at the front end. And the back end, there are property management systems that have accounting and that sort of stuff. We sit in the middle along with the property management system. It's really all the activity of the business that occurs in the four walls of the condo or the house or the apartment.
So who's your customer?
Our customer is property managers, either third-party property managers or owner-operators, people who own their own properties. So it could be, it's amazingly, in vacation rentals, a very diverse space. There are huge companies that have thousands of units under management, but a lot of it is 50 or 100 units under management. For example, I'm going to Destin, Florida in a couple of days for a business conference, and Destin, places like that. I mean, almost every condo you see is professionally managed by a property manager because the owner might be a dentist in Nashville or something. In the residential world, it tends to be more sort of Wall Street money in REITs, real estate investment trusts that are owning and building thousands of houses at a time, especially in growth areas. I live in Dallas, but places like Dallas, Houston, Atlanta are just turning prairie or forest into suburbia at a rapid rate, even with high interest rates like we have now.
So what is the biggest challenge getting that information out there, especially because you're not just a B2B, it seems like, because again, a lot of C's are their businesses, but yet they're smaller.
It's B2B, and then the B's work with the C's. I feel like Dave Chappelle saying that is a bad joke. But the biggest challenge we have is that real estate people are very small C conservative. They just they tend to worry about the day to day problems like housekeeping or whatever, or maintenance management, and they don't necessarily think to invest for the longer haul. And software of any type is a financial cost up front, but it's also a attention deficit. You have to learn how to use it, and most people resist that. And so they'll note, it's kind of like joining the gym or losing weight. Here we are in January, where a lot of people are doing that. Everyone admits they want to do it. They just want to start next week. And so our biggest challenge is to break that procrastination cycle. People know they need to do it. They will do it eventually. And because of that, they're not eager to get started.
What is your value proposition that makes you different from your competition or to the fit that mold of the real estate people? Because again, you're saying they don't want to invest, but what solution do you fix?
It's really threefold. It is saving money, which is mostly labor and energy. Energy is a big way. So, for example, not uncommon if you're a property manager, you might have a condo in, say, Miami in July, and it's blasting the air conditioner at 60 degrees and no one's there. That's a crime to the planet, and it's a crime to your bottom line. So if you have a centralized system that'll tell you, hey, why is unit 362 at 60 degrees when it's no one's in there, and you can change it remotely without having to send somebody out in a pickup truck or a golf cart, that saves a lot of money. So that also makes labor more efficient. And then it delivers a better customer experience. These days, if you remember, say 15 years ago, if you visited a hotel, you'd be happy if it had Wi-Fi. Now, if you stay in a hotel and the Wi-Fi is not blazing fast, you think there's something wrong with the hotel. I mean, you know, everything else can be beautiful and you condemn it for being not digitally hip or, you know, up to date. Right. It's the same way with other digital smart home and other things. If you're fumbling with a metal lock or a key card in a hotel, it's not a great experience. I mean, you expect things to be more modern, to use your phone to unlock the door or to use a code that you've been given in the combination pad, things like that. So it's saving money. It's delivering a better customer experience or resident experience. And then finally reducing risk. It's not so sexy, but things like leak detectors, noise detectors, smoke detectors, some of those are by code. But for example, a leak on the top floor of an apartment building is going to cause a lot of damage. And if you could have gotten ahead of that with a moisture meter or a leak detector that senses that. Another thing that's interesting these days is noise monitoring, believe it or not. You mentioned Airbnb. It's a challenge in a lot of communities, especially around spring break or when partiers rent a unit and the music is being played too loudly. A noise monitor can detect that and then text the resident to say, hey, it's after quiet hours and you're being too loud. And 9 times out of 10, that solves it. People don't want to be rude. They just forgot. They just got excited about their little party. And that saves, you don't have to call the police out and all that sort of stuff, which really annoys neighbors. And then you end up with people at City Hall or at town council meetings asking for Airbnb restrictions and so on. So it all ties in together. So risk reduction is the third major benefit.
So the property management, again, there's so many things that come under property management. Yeah. There are apartments, there are Airbnbs, there are other types of things. So you really run in a gamut and real estate, like certain big real estate dealings. So you keep busy in this, but this solution. So the bottom line, when you have these conversations with people, they understand then that they're going to save money on the long run. It's a future thing where, hey, yeah, right now it might cost you, but it's going to cost you a lot in staffing. It's going to cost you a lot in bad reviews because Airbnbs live off of reviews. If they don't get the good reviews, they don't get more business. Exactly, so it increases the bottom line and all those things. All right.
That's exactly right. And they know it's going to work. They just, we're all human and we tend to procrastinate. That's the only issue.
What other business? Do you have any other businesses right now? Or is this?
No, that's my only current one. I sit on some boards of other small companies and a large charter school system here in Texas as well. So that's more of community service than I do as a volunteer. But I also have my eye out and, we'll keep growing. This one has such great prospects that I'll focus on this for the next couple of years and see where it goes.
All right. Best place people can find you. Where can they connect?
Yeah, probably LinkedIn is a great place to find me personally. And then my company, BeHome247.com. BeHome247.com.
All right. We appreciate it, Peter. It was a really great conversation. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show. And we'll be back in just a moment.